And sit back now for a great story. Growing up in Boston, Rachel Cerati always knew her grandmother was a Jewish Holocaust survivor, but by the time she made it to college, Rachel wanted to learn more. So the two of them sat down for oral histories. Her grandmother's story is a dramatic tale of World War II. But even Rachel had no idea how it would transform the next 8 years of her life. Erica Lance from member station WBUR's podcast Kind World tells us what happened.
Rachel Cerati remembers the day she and her grandmother, Hannah Dubova, started talking about the past.
She had this box of wine, and it was like only slightly expired red wine. So we each poured like a cup, and we went to sit on her porch, and it overlooks this parking lot.
Hannah was born in 1925 in what was then called Czechoslovakia. When Adolf Hitler came to power and the Nazis threatened all of Europe, her family was desperate to get out. They couldn't find a country that would take them. But then came a sliver of hope.
The Danish government agreed to take in a set number of Czech Jewish children between the ages of 14 and 16 and put them on foster farms in Denmark. And Hannah was chosen.
Soon, 14-year-old Hannah was at a train station saying goodbye to her family. Her parents and her little brother would die in an extermination camp within a few years. But Hannah survived because of the farmers in Denmark who took her in. Then, when the Danish underground learned that Nazis were planning to round up Jews, a fisherman smuggled Hannah to Sweden by hiding her under herring in his boat. As Rachel listened to her grandmother, this story of survival filled her with awe.
We hear about all this, like, horrific details over and over again, but there are these, like, stories that compete with that where it's like, yeah, but look what you can do that can save people. I mean, it's a really different story than friends of mine who's grandparents weren't in concentration camps. Like, Hannah was never in a camp because people kept her safe, because people, you know, honored her life as a human.
So, when Hannah died at age 85, Rachel decided to retrace her grandmother's footsteps as a refugee and find the people who saved her. Over the past 8 years, she's replicated her grandmother's journey as closely as she can, and found many people connected to it. For example, decades earlier, Hannah had written about how she found herself skipping and singing after she moved in with one particular foster family in Denmark.
In her letters, she talks about all of a sudden feeling at home. They treated her like family.
When Rachel found descendants of that family, she asked to live on their farm, just as her grandmother had. The farm belonged to Signe Christensen and her husband. Signe's grandmother had hosted Rachel's grandmother 74 years before.
We all knew the story, but it became different when I met Rachel.
That's Signe. She told Rachel that her grandmother had often worried about what had happened to that refugee from Czechoslovakia.
We talked about our grandmoms, and we started to feel a little connected or in family or something because of their connection. I think they had a special bond.
Rachel moved in and helped Signe with farm work, just as their grandmothers had done. They laughed, they cooked, they even sang together, and gradually, Rachel felt like one of them.
You know, I'm reading words that my grandmother wrote about this family from 1941, and it's like I could take those words and put them into my diary today about their descendants.
By the time Rachel got married in 2016, Signe felt like family. And Rachel actually celebrated her wedding at Signe's farm with the descendants of Hannah's foster parents.
I remember Signe turning to me and saying, you know, I think our grandmothers are smiling down at us. That's just like what it feels like.
1 month after that wedding, Rachel and her new husband, Sergio Scheller, were back in Boston, making plans for their new life together. Rachel had no idea that everything was about to change for her. It started when Sergio heard a radio interview that he thought might help her with her work. It was with a woman named Julie Lindahl.
She was talking about this research, and she'd spent many years retracing her family history, but she had come from this perspective as the granddaughter of an SS officer.
As a young girl, Julie had always sensed some terrible secret in her family. Here's Julie.
The feeling that my sister and I always had was that there was this corpse that was lying in the room that was covered over with a blanket, and nobody wanted to uncover it.
Julie was in her 40s before she unearthed the truth. Her grandfather had been a brutal SS officer during World War II. She's devoted years since then to researching her grandfather. As Sergio listened, he was stunned by how much her work paralleled his wife Rachel's project. Yes, Rachel was descended from a Holocaust survivor, and Julie from Nazis. But they were both immersed in the same history.
Sergio called me from the car and was like, oh my God, Rachel. He was like, you're not alone. You're not alone.
So the next day, Rachel and Sergio huddled around her computer and wrote an email to Julie. Sergio left her in the office, and Rachel was back to work when something startled her.
I just like heard this massive thump. I went over and I was like, Sergio?
Rachel walked across the hall and found him on the floor.
I was giving CPR. Time stops, but it's also sped up. Compressions and breaths and all of that. Weirdly calm and weird madness. What is happening?
Frantic, she called 911, but she had an awful feeling it was too late.
I think he was trying to hold on for me. I know the minute he died, and I know the minute his eyes changed from life to no life.
An ambulance rushed him to the hospital, but nothing could be done. Sergio had died of a heart attack. He was 28 years old.
You know, I sat with his body until they wouldn't let me anymore. And then the next morning, I woke up in my parents' basement.
She looked out the window, heavy and numb.
The sun's coming in through the leaves, and if you move your head just like a couple little millimeters, you know, the sun ray looks different and it shines through a different leaf. And if you move your head a little bit to the other way, it, you know, illuminates something else. Just in that slight little movement of the head, you get a different perspective of what life looks like. I remember just kind of playing with that for a little bit and feeling nothing and feeling everything.
Rachel was still in bed that morning when she saw an email from Julie Lindahl, the woman Rachel and Sergio had been so excited to email together the night before.
That was kind of our last activity together. In a normal world, I would wake up at home and been like, Sergio, Sergio, guess who wrote me back? This is going to be so great. And we would have like, he would have made breakfast and we would have talked about it. And then it was the first time that I wanted to share something with him and couldn't.
A few weeks later, Julie and Rachel started talking. Rachel still felt the unimaginable shock of Sergio's death, but somehow she felt like she could share that with Julie. Julie had already looked into the face of darkness, unearthing her grandfather's crimes. And unlike a lot of people, she didn't shy away from talking about death.
When people die, sometimes other people don't want to include them in the narrative anymore. She speaks of him as if he's still present, and that is incredibly meaningful for me.
Julie also understood pretty quickly that Sergio was alive and the connection between the two women.
When we reached out to each other, something very important happened, because you have now two sides of your life, the life before he died and now the life after. Because you sent this mail, and then I responded after he died. There was something about it that was kind of surreal. Yeah. And it was a bit like a bridge.
Julie and Rachel have started to think of their friendship as an educational peace project. At a time when the world can feel polarized and intolerant, the more they talk, the more they find common ground.
Perhaps if somebody looked at our stories on paper, you couldn't think they'd be more further apart, right? A perpetrator and a victim. But when we start getting to talking, all of these themes that come out are just so universal. Mm. And it, all of a sudden, it feels much more connected. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of wish more people could do that.
I often feel like the two of us are kind of like a couple of voices calling back from the future of today and kind of shouting out from the future, saying, choose another path.
Julie and Rachel want to use lessons from their grandparents' lives to keep history from repeating itself. And doing so together, they feel less alone.
Why drive yourself a little crazy with all of this?
I guess that's why we had to meet each other.
Yeah.
It's been a little over a year since Sergio died. But to Rachel, he's still very much alive.
So the more I think about the fact that you and I have this friendship now where we've talked about these, you know, incredibly deep things, and then he was, the link to that is like so beautiful. Sergio gave me so many gifts in life, but that was his final, one of his final gifts.
Rachel may not be able to make sense of her husband's sudden death, but she can find meaning in the gifts he gave her. And if she moves her head a little to the left or right, some sunlight still shifts through the branches. For Here and Now, I'm Erica Lantz.
And Erica's story comes to us from the WBUR podcast, Kind World. You're listening to Here and Now.